This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A teenage girl takes her own life, but before she does, she records audio tapes for those she felt wronged her and whom she holds responsible for her death. That is the premise of 13 Reasons Why. It's a new show on Netflix that is raising eyebrows over its depiction of teen suicide. Some fear that it glamorizes what is the second leading cause of teen death and may lead to copycat cases. We're going to talk about teen suicide and mental health and about how parents can talk to their children about mental health issues. But we start with an examination of this show. Should you let your teens watch it? Does it cross the line? Are there boundaries for putting a spotlight on teen suicide? We're joined now by Bethany Butler. She's a TV reporter for The Washington Post. She joins us by phone, and she's written extensively about this Netflix show. Bethany, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This show is based on a best-selling book, as I understand it, a young adult book by Jay Asher. Did the book raise concerns about teens getting the wrong idea about suicide?
You know, the book is extremely popular. It was first published in 2007, and it's been popular since it was first published. I have not seen evidence that there were similar concerns around the book. One of the interesting things around the book was that a lot of the reason that the book became so popular was word of mouth. This was not, you know, immediately a bestseller. You know, and the book is slightly different from the series. The series takes place over a much longer period of time. I have not read the book, but from what I understand, it unfolds over one night. The series is, you know, weeks and possibly months. It's a much longer period of time. So between the popularity of the book and the fact that Selena Gomez is an executive producer of this series, you know, the series just really took off. It's been really buzzed about. Everyone's talking about it. So I think there's a lot more attention on the series than there was on the book.
In the opening sentence of an article you wrote recently about this, I think it was back in April, you say that the show offers a well-intentioned message about being kinder to others and asking for help when you need it. But some suicide prevention experts say the series could do more harm than good. Now, there have been lots of concerns about over the course of the history of television about the impact of certain TV shows, particularly when a television program has been new or innovative or groundbreaking in some way. It's happened throughout the history of TV, dating back to the 1940s. Do you think that those concerns in this case are well-founded?
Well, the suicide prevention advocates that I talked to and referenced in my piece, you know, their concern is really the messaging that's in this series. So we have a story about a young girl who takes her own life, and she leaves these audio tapes essentially blaming her death on her classmates. And that is a problem for people who work in suicide prevention, because a lot of what they are educating young people on is that there is no blame in suicide, that you can't, you know, you can't place blame on a person. You can't point to a single event and say this is why this person chose to take their life. And so that's one problem. And the other thing is that the series doesn't ever really address the issue of mental health. And, you know, suicide prevention advocates will say that, you know, typically people who kill themselves are people who die by suicide are, you know, they do suffer from mental illness more often than not. And, you know, mental illness is something that can be treated. And so since the show doesn't really delve into that and it doesn't really present that alternative that, you know, if you are struggling with these suicidal thoughts, you can get help. That's why it's become such a concern for mental health advocates and also, you know, educators.
But a TV show is not a classroom, particularly a TV drama. It's
That's
not
correct.
A classroom. It's not a college course on suicide or mental health. It's a television program. So and TV
right.
programs deal with a wide variety of issues that there are college courses on, and we don't get this kind of reaction from them. This show features what you and others have described as a graphic depiction of her death. How graphic?
It's very graphic. It shows basically from start to, you know, mm-hmm. the completion of her suicide.
So why there's some concern about this show raising the possibility of copycat suicides. Why wouldn't that graphic, gruesome depiction of a person's own death not dissuade people from this as a course of action?
Well, there's a lot of there've been a lot of studies about the what's called the contagion effect or copycat suicides, and what suicide prevention experts have found is that and not just on TV either, but sort of describing a suicide in graphic detail can be a problem for people who are vulnerable, who are struggling with suicidal thoughts or their emotional health. And so it's the reason why, suicide prevention experts advise journalists when they're writing a story about people who die by suicide not to, you know, be unnecessarily graphic or sensational. Mm. And so the same issue is sort of at play here with the TV show, you know, and I should say that the experts that I talk to, they're not saying, you know, don't watch the show. They know that kids are watching the show. Their advice is for children to watch it with their parents, to have in-depth discussions, to talk about the things that are not addressed in the TV series. So to talk about mental health, to talk about sort of where Hannah Baker, the character in the series, where she could have sought help, and, you know, the type of reaction that generally in real life you're likely to get from a mental health professional if you go to them for help. That's not what Hannah receives in the series.
Bethany Butler is a TV reporter for The Washington Post who has written about this Netflix TV show, 13 Reasons Why, and you just mentioned guidelines for reporters when they are reporting on suicides. They're called Recommendations for Reporting on Suicide. I'm not sure who put that out, but it's been out there for years, and it emphasizes that suicide is the result of multiple causes, including mental illness, and not something to be blamed on a person or an event. And obviously, this television show that we're talking about here goes against all of that. It's the fundamental premise of the show to take you in these places. But this is a drama and not the reportage of an actual event. Does that give it a pass? Is there a difference?
I think that's up for debate. And I think that is why a lot of the focus is on, you know, not whether kids should watch it, although there have certainly been people who have said, no, they shouldn't, but more on that, you know, kids who are going to watch this, teenagers, young people, should be watching it with their parents, and they should have tools at their disposal to know, you know, what to identify in this series as not being realistic and, you know, being able to discuss what would happen if they were struggling and they needed help.
You spoke with Dan Rydenberg, who's executive director of Suicide Awareness Voices of Education, SAVE for short, who said that this depiction in this television show glamorizes the death and sends a potentially dangerous message to viewers. When we talk about the gruesome graphic nature of how she commits suicide and the fact that it's shown in complete detail on TV, how is that glamorizing this event?
Well, I think the concern around glamorization are the audio tapes themselves. The fact that the story is told through these tapes and through these, she's focusing on, you know, specific classmates and in one case, a faculty member at her school. And we're sort of seeing her story and seeing all of the different ways that people around her hurt her after her death. Mm-hmm. The idea that she gets to tell her story after her death is, you know, unrealistic. When you die, you don't really, you know, what Dan Rydenberg said to me is that, you know, the idea, and mind you, young people are not, you know, we're talking about young people who may not be able to separate
fact from fiction
from reality, or who may struggle with that.
And we'll talk about that later in the program with our other guests, because I think that's something that people don't really kind of quite understand, that the teenage brain is still developing, and sometimes fact and fiction seem to mix. We see examples of that higher up these days as well. The book has been out since 2007. The show debuted in March on Netflix. They post all of the episodes of a series on Netflix at the same time so that you can consume the entire show in one setting if you choose to do that. Have there been any copycat suicides or negative consequences since this show became available in March? Or is it mostly acting as a catalyst for discussions like the one we're having right now?
Yeah, I would not be able to speak to whether there have been copycat incidents. I know there's a great deal of concern on the part of educators and school psychologists. But I also know that it has led to a great deal of discussion because of, you know, Netflix does not release viewership information, but right. We know that it's popular because people have been talking about it on social media.
Before we started with this conversation with the guests we're about to meet, one of them talked about having watched several episodes of this and how it's very difficult to watch, and it stays with you after you turn it off. And Netflix, the series producers, have said that they want the show to be difficult to watch because they wanted to make clear that there is nothing in any way worthwhile about suicide. Does that come through in this show?
You know, I'm not I think it definitely comes through that they want to start a conversation. There is a featurette also on Netflix, as sort of a companion featurette right. to the series, and it's called Beyond the Reasons. And that features the producers, including Selena Gomez and her mother, Mandy Teefy, and also the writer of the show, the creator, Brian Yorkey. And so they go more into detail concerning their what they want right. people to take from the series.
Are kids likely to watch the featurette, which is essentially a short documentary? Are they likely to watch that or to stick with the show?
I'm not sure if they are. I mean, it is linked from the show page, and, you know, to some extent, I do think that the show is popular enough that mm-hmm. that people want to watch everything there is to watch
despite all this negative conversation that's swirling around this show, or maybe because of it. Netflix has renewed this show for a second season already. Is that an indication that criticism is falling on deaf ears, or merely a difference of opinion on the impact of this show, either encouraging or preventing teen suicide?
Well, I think that Netflix and, again, the producers of the show have been really clear about wanting to start a discussion. And, you know, that has certainly happened because of the show's popularity, because of the media coverage. And so I think, you know, I don't know exactly why they decided to renew it, but, you know, they said that they want to start an honest conversation and keep it going. And there are, you know, plot-wise, there are things that were left sort of unresolved at the end of season one.
Netflix has, because of viewer complaints, they have strengthened the warning that they put before the first episode, essentially not unlike what you see on regular television. The following episode contains scenes that some viewers may find disturbing and or may not be suitable for younger audiences, including graphic depictions of rape and sexual assault. Viewer discretion is advised. We have 10 seconds. You don't sound to me old enough to have teens, but would you let your teenager watch it?
Right. I do not have a teenager. I think I would not stop them from watching it, but I'd want to have it.
Bethany Butler with The Washington Post. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NC Warn, working to slow climate change by curbing methane emissions from the fracked gas and power industries. Information on clean energy alternatives at ncwarn.org. And from Veritas Collaborative, offering a continuing education series on eating disorders for healthcare professionals on Friday, May 19th. Information at veritascollaborative.com/events. Donald Trump promised on the campaign trail to restore law and order. Now the president's Justice Department is reversing an Obama-era effort to ease prison sentences for nonviolent drug offenses. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has told federal prosecutors to pursue the harshest punishments possible. It's the first step in a return to the war on drugs from the 1980s and 90s. They'll be talking about that in 20 minutes, not actually 40 minutes, during On Point. Guest host Jane Clayson is in today.
Welcome to America.
People whose only infraction is being born in a country other than the United States should really make us wonder as to the horrible treatment that they're enduring.
How immigration detention became common practice in a country with more jails than colleges. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
This afternoon at 2 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're going to widen our discussion now to talk about teen suicide in general. And joining us is Dr. John Santopietro, Chief Clinical Officer of Behavioral Health at Carolina's Healthcare System. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be here.
He's in our Spirit Square studio with us. Also with us is Lynn Henninghausen, Director of Davidson Lifeline. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Lisa Newman is Crisis Specialist in Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools Student Services. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa, let me begin with you. I know that you have chosen not to watch this show. Why?
Well, in our district, I am responsible for the suicide assessment protocol, and I read and talk about suicide with a lot of students. I'm very familiar with a lot of the graphic details of suicide within our community. Mm-hmm. Because of that, as a protective mode for me, one of the things of self-care is to make sure that you are taking care of yourself as a protective factor. I wanted to be sure I didn't expose myself to the graphic details that I had heard about in this show.
So, if a lot of kids are watching this and they're troubled by it, or they have questions as a result of it, or it changes their attitude one way or another about potentially taking their own lives, you don't feel you need to have that in your arsenal to talk about on the same level with them?
That's a great question. So one of the great things about being a member of a professional organization and being a part of a team is many of my teammates have seen the show. Mm-hmm. So they're able to give me the information that I need to have in order to best do my job. And also, I've participated in a lot of professional webinars and updates that give us the important scenes and information that we need to know in order to help our students.
Okay. Lynn Henninghausen, I know that you've seen it because we talked about it just prior to the start of the show. Dr. Santopietro, have you seen the show?
I have not, actually.
Okay. You have an interest in seeing the show?
You know, it doesn't fit in my schedule just now, but I did see a couple of web videos that you guys were talking about, and I think that's informed me a little bit.
So from what you know, Lynn Henninghausen, and you work with Davidson Lifeline, which deals with teenagers and who have problems that may cause them to contemplate this, what is your take on 13 Reasons Why?
My thoughts are complicated around 13 Reasons Why. I think the exposure of the topic is so critical. I am concerned at the sensational approach that 13 Reasons Why took, the explicit sexual scenes as well as the depiction of the suicide, I think aren't helpful to the conversation we're trying to have. Mm.
She suffers sexual assault
in
the course of the show. Is that what drives her to take her own life, or are there additional reasons?
There are 13 reasons.
13 reasons,
right?
Involving 13 people.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I think is attractive for kids is that it covers bullying, it covers sexual assault, it covers kids and drinking and driving. Those issues touch every one of our kids
Sure.
in some way.
Is it covering too much ground for one individual to have those 13 different grievances? Or is that a convenient device to address all of the issues that teenagers have trouble with at the same time with the same person, making it therefore unrealistic?
I think it does. Whether kids think it's unrealistic is a different issue. So I think one of the things that I come away with is no one's happy in this high school, right? No one seems to be happy anywhere, inside or outside of the school.
Well, isn't
halls.
That the myth of high school, that high school is a horrible 4 years of your life? It wasn't for me.
But. And then we look back and say, wow, that was great.
No, I loved it when I was in it. So, does this glamorize, in your opinions, teen suicide? And if so, how?
Well, you know, Michael, I would go back to what you and Bethany were talking about when you were asking her about the contagion effect. Mm-hmm. And that's something that has been studied in the literature. And it really gets to the question of, you know, what is it that that makes it contagious? What is it about the teenage mind, like you said? What is it about the graphic nature of the medium. And by the way, the literature has shown, there was a question in there about if it's news reports, it's actually more likely to precipitate contagion than if it's entertainment. But there's still contagion effect in just entertainment shows as well.
This show is clearly provocative, particularly to the adults assembled in this room and to even Bethany, who writes about TV as a reporter for The Washington Post. Is it provocative to teenagers? Or is their life experience not quite what our old fogey life experience is? And so we've seen a lot of water under the bridge, and this is something very new and shocking to us, but maybe not to them because they haven't been shocked that often in their lives.
Well, that actually is one of the things that bears out in the literature. So Maddie Gould, who is one of the people that has done a lot of this research up at Columbia, has found actually that the segment of the population that is most susceptible are teenagers, more so than adults. There's still an effect in adults, but not as pronounced as with teenagers. So, yes, I think that the mind is more vulnerable at that time.
One criticism, and this came up in our earlier conversation, is that the show goes against everything experts know about suicide, its causes, its means of prevention. And in Slate, Marissa Martinelli writes, it places the responsibility for a person's suicide on the survivors of suicide and creates a false illusion that a suicidal person can be in control after death. Agree with that?
Lisa? I do. Absolutely. One of the things that my understanding of the show is that there are valid reasons that are the reason why she completes suicide. And one of the things we know is there are so many reasons that suicide occurs that are unexplainable to us after death. We do know mental health is also strongly involved, and the show doesn't include that reason as another thing to consider. One of the other concerns that we have is that none of the adults in the show are helpful. So when someone reaches out for help, what the show has shown is that you don't get the help that you're looking for.
Could that be an allegory? I mean, in other words, a lot of kids who take this drastic step may feel that they've exhausted all of their avenues for help and nothing they found was helpful, or adults brushed them off, or as the high school counselor evidently, and we'll talk about that in the show, does. It's coming from their perspective, but there's nothing to counterbalance that?
I think there are things to counterbalance that. I think the show does not do justice to the adults in our kids' lives. There are adults in our kids' lives. CMS does a great job and is working really hard to address social-emotional learning in children. I think as parents, we play a critical role. It's not just about schools. It's not just about the community. It's about families as well, and being engaged and asking questions. Like tonight, I think every listener, if they have an adolescent, should say, hey, have you watched the show, without judgment around it, and start a conversation.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to this comment that Marissa Martinelli made in Slate about this creating that the false illusion that a suicidal person can control things after they die. That's very attractive, I would think, because you're getting people back for all the things that they've allegedly done to you. But isn't that exactly what happens? I mean, when you take your own life, the consequences are for the survivors to handle. Isn't that exactly what happens? Isn't that power?
You know, and that actually reminds me, one of the other interesting stories out there is Kurt Cobain's suicide, right? And there was a real concern that that would precipitate contagion, and in fact it didn't when the studies came out. And there was a notion that that maybe had to do with Courtney Love. It was her voice that was in the news mostly after that, and it was very much getting the word out that this is painful to everybody that survives. And I think I haven't seen the show, but I do wonder how much of that message comes across in the show versus the glamour of it.
Lynn, you've seen it.
Yeah, I think that there's not a lot of help offered. And I think that we do need to do a better job of understanding signs and symptoms, and we do have to be more educated around it. I think mental illness and suicide are the only diseases that we blame victims for, right?
I want to talk to you, Lynn, and you, Lisa, because you deal directly with teenagers. And maybe you do, too, Dr. Santu. I also talked to all three of you about this. It just occurred to me that you probably deal with teens, too. Who are the teens in particular or in general who are most likely to see this as an option?
I think our teenagers who are at risk of suicide, ones who are experiencing depression, symptoms of depression, ones who are experiencing a lot of emotional distress, family dysfunction, a lot of avenues that they have, a lot of stressors that they don't have the coping skills for. A lot of our teenagers are having conversations, thanks to the show, about suicide, but many of our children also watch the show without anyone to guide them through how to see this from a different perspective than their own, how to deal with these situations if they are encountering
them. They watching it and then talking to their peers about it in some cases? Maybe they're not watching it together at the same time. That's part of the problem with modern TV viewing. There's no communal experience. We didn't tune in at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night as a nation to see this show. It's being seen right now by millions of people. But are they comparing notes?
They absolutely are. One of the many calls that I get frequently, especially since the show's come out in March, is around students having conversations about the show. Did you see the show? Did you watch the show? What did you think about whatever happened on the show, the episodes they watched? They may watch them together or decide to talk about those episodes together. And so we've had a lot of conversations from student perspectives, which needed then our educators to get on top of what they were talking about and be able to deliver the alternative message around 13 Reasons Why Not and around getting help if they know someone who is experiencing that.
One of the criticisms of the show that we've already talked about is that there's no place in this show, at least as it's depicted, for this young person, Hannah, to turn. Every time she goes to somebody who could do something perhaps for her, it doesn't happen. They ignore her or whatever. Where do real teens turn who are having problems and who are who may be contemplating this? Where do they turn?
Unfortunately, many turn to other students. And so one of the things that we try to do is give messaging and education to our teenagers that if they have friends who are thinking about suicide, who are talking about wanting to die, who are idolizing methods, who are gathering those conversations that sound really depressive, to alert an adult. One of our best resources at the teenage level are other peers who share with an adult that they're worried about a friend.
And CMS has a hotline.
We do have a hotline. It's around generally bullying and other things, but we sometimes get reports that way. We also get calls directly to our counselors, psychologists, and social workers or principals at the school, and then we enact an assessment process within our district.
Lynn, you work with an organization called Davidson Lifeline. Is there a hotline associated with your organization?
There's not a hotline associated with our organization. We offer the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And also a text hotline where you can text the word CONNECT to 741-741, and trained counselors are on the other end of the phone.
One of the other things that's stressed by critics of this show is that there's not enough discussion of mental health problems among teenagers. Do all teens and adults who contemplate or ultimately resort to suicide, do they all suffer mental health issues, or is it because of other things not associated with mental health? In other words, do you have to have a mental illness to commit suicide?
Well, when people look at people who have died by suicide, the studies tend to show that about 90% of people had a diagnosable mental illness beforehand. So the answer is yes. I think that's another concern about the show is that, as Bethany was talking about, the emphasis is on suicide as a reaction to the wrongs that have been dealt you as opposed to it's a result of untreated mental illness, and that's one of the messages we want to get out.
You know, we've talked so many times on this and other programs about mental illness and the stigma attached to mental illness and to seeking help for your mental illness that we would not have if we had a physical ailment. You'd go to the doctor, you'd tell your friends, even things like cancer, which used to be whispered about, are completely open now. Mental health is still, to a great degree, in the shadows. So when you say somebody may suffer from a mental health disorder or issue, what are you saying? What kinds of mental health disorders are there? That doesn't mean you're crazy.
Right. No, absolutely not. No, it means most commonly things like depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder. Again, one of the problems is that people don't come in because of the stigma. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned cancer. There's more stigma about something when it's thought to be untreatable. And one of the messages I think you've done a great job getting out in this program is that mental illness actually is treatable. And the more people get that idea, I think the less stigma there will be.
And how do you know? Because, you know, I remember, I'm still like this, but I remember as a teenager, you'd go through these periods of depression. Nobody likes me. I'm not doing well in school. I'm chosen last for basketball and gym. It's depressing. How do you know that's just a normal wave course of things versus real, actual mental health depression?
Right, and that's a great question. So there's a real difference between sort of just the blues that everybody goes up and down in their moods versus, you know, a real mental illness where people start showing significant changes in behavior. So appetite is off, or people are not sleeping, or with kids there might be agitation or signs like a kid might start giving their, you know, things away. That's a mm-hmm. real kind of ominous sign. So yeah, absolutely, it's not just the up and down. It's that something in the life is really changing.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, Lisa, that a lot of young people come from dysfunctional families. So when they're having problems, they can't necessarily turn to mom and dad or even their older brother or sister if there is one in the family. So how do you help them? How do you get to them? How do you notice that they need help? Because they're not necessarily likely to turn to anybody.
Well, and it could also be their perception that their family is dysfunctional, because it's also about the child's perception that a family member is there to help them and take care of them when needed. We have a lot of intact families that we would view as functional that also teenagers do not feel are functional families. So we help them by sending messaging repeatedly within our schools that if they need help or support, we want them to reach out to their adults, to their teachers in their life, to mentors in their life. And we also, in our lessons sometimes, in fact, I just delivered one yesterday, one of the questions we asked in our lesson was, who are the adults in your life that you feel support you and that you can talk to if you're feeling stressed out? If we notice when we're getting answers back from our students that they don't have any adults to mark down, then we reach out and help provide them and connect them with other adults. It may be someone like a coach. It may be someone, a religious figure. It may be someone in the school. It really depends on where we can start that child's interest.
The three of you, are you aware? I asked Bethany this question. Are you aware of any negative fallout, any attempted suicides or any actual suicides that have we can pin directly to young people having seen this show, and this is acting as an encouraging, a motivating sign for them?
I've not seen any direct evidence of that. I did have a conversation with John Draper, who's the director of National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and he said that this spring there is an increase in calls, 16% higher, in fact, in April than a year ago. But he also said that we can't relate that necessarily to the show causing darkness and distress mm-hmm. versus the show and others publicizing the phone number, which is now everywhere as well. So I think we have anecdotes and we feel like we need to make that a case.
Len Henninghausen is the director of the Davidson Lifeline. We'll take a break and come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Blue Ridge Music Center. Its summer 2017 concert series hosts the Steel Wheels, the QB Sisters, Steep Canyon Rangers, and Mipso. Saturdays at 7 p.m. on the Blue Ridge Parkway, BlueRidgeMusicCenter.org. Opponents of North Carolina's voter ID law are cheering the Supreme Court's decision yesterday not to hear an appeal to that controversial law. That means a lower court ruling that struck down the voter law stays in place. But Republicans in Raleigh say they are not giving up. So we'll take a look at what happens next in the battle over voting rights in North Carolina tomorrow on this program at 9.
The day's news can seem like a barrage of information. NPR hits the pause button.
Google wouldn't let me inside of its South Carolina data center, which opened up nearly a decade ago in Berkeley County. But it's in a suburban area surrounded by woods and office buildings. Emily Sedzo of the Coastal Conservation League says she worries about its impact on the underground.
We ask one more question, get a different perspective, and explain how it affects your life. Listen every day.
At 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. John Santopietro is with us. He's the Chief Clinical Officer of Behavioral Health at Carolina's Healthcare System. Lynn Henninghausen is Director of Davidson Lifeline, and Lisa Newman is a Crisis Specialist at CMS Student Services. The National Association of School Counselors, Lynn, has published a guide for teachers and parents and students around this Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why, and the questions it raises. How helpful has that been? Do you know? Or Lisa?
I will say that we have distributed that throughout our entire school district, and a lot of our staff have then given it to families. Particularly, we've asked them to target families of children they view as vulnerable or at risk. Mm-hmm. So they've sent that information home. They have shared it with families. They've shared it with staff. It's been very helpful to drive conversation. In fact, many of our schools have had staff meetings centered around just the information from that fact sheet and making sure people understood how to have a conversation with students about suicide.
One of the things, and this came up in our conversation with Bethany, that the major criticism of this show is that it promotes the idea that you, as the person taking your own life, can blame others for that decision. And in this show, the lead character leaves behind tapes for the 13 people who in some way, she says or she believes, have influenced that decision, either through their actions or their inactions. Obviously, people who do this have certainly blamed others. Why not talk about it as a way of removing it as a valid excuse? And why isn't it a valid excuse?
Blaming others?
Blaming others.
Well, one of the things we again know is there is no one reason, and a lot of it has to do with, I think what happens after a suicide is a lot of people take on guilt and believe that they could have done something differently or that they should have done something differently or maybe not had that negative interaction. What we know is suicide is not usually the result of just that one action or just multiple actions across 13 reasons in this particular case, that it does have such a mental health tie-in. And that without treatment, that is what can create that.
This is a fictional character, mm-hmm. but you've seen, I don't know if you've seen the whole series, Lynn, but you have all 13 episodes of the first season. One of the other criticisms is that there's no mention of mental health in this or depression. We don't know whether she's suffering from clinical depression in this. Would that have been helpful to know? And when you look at her as a fictional character, well, I'm going to stress this is not real, does she exhibit signs of the kinds of mental illness that might lead to suicide?
I think her relationships are extremely complicated. I think the counselors in the school had mostly, I would say, not helpful communications, but
well, that's another criticism. But that the counselor's response to her is not appropriate or typical.
Right. The final interaction is not appropriate, and my experience with my kids in school systems is it's not typical.
Well, just because it's not appropriate or it's atypical doesn't mean that it doesn't happen.
Absolutely correct. And it does happen. As adults, we mishandle things all the time.
So there's a lesson in there not only for teens, there's lessons in there for adults. I mean, if you can clearly look at this counselor's handling of her in this situation as being inappropriate, then clearly there's a lesson to learn.
I think there's a lesson for all of us to be engaged. And I think as counselors, as mentors, as teachers, as parents, to be truly engaged in our interactions with kids has to happen because that's when you're in relationship and you have true connection. That's when you get to know someone, and only in knowing someone can you know when something is not typical.
Bethany Bettler, I'm going to bring her back up again. She was our guest from the Washington Post. She's a TV reporter, but in one of her articles about this, she quotes the Washington Post's TV critic, that's a different person, saying there are 13 episodes lasting 13 super sullen hours, a passive-aggressive, implausibly meandering, poorly written, and awkwardly acted effort that is mainly about miscommunication, delivering no more wisdom or insight about depression, bullying, and suicide than one of those old ABC after-school specials that are now mocked as corny. Well, those are glowing words. So given that, why has this had any impact at all? Why are kids watching this?
I think getting back to Lynn's point, and this is the irony of having the mental health folks in the room, you know, now telling you that we should be hesitant about getting the word out, because mostly we want to talk about mental health. And there's definitely good things that are being talked about. So self-harm and rape, certainly it's good for us to have a conversation about that and that it actually happens, and suicide. I think to your question earlier, Michael, the question is really a matter of emphasis. So it's not so much that they're not legitimate things to be upset about, but suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And, you know, human beings are, you know, we learn from each other. And I think that's why teens are so vulnerable to messaging in the media. They very much pick up cues and respond to them.
I had a young man on this program a couple of years ago who is one of the few people who survived jumping from the Golden Gate Bridge. And he was on this program for an hour. He survived, obviously, after going through years of considerably painful recovery, because you don't hit the water coming down off the Golden Gate Bridge comfortably. And it's also a long way down, he said. He said the instant his body lost contact with the bridge, he regretted his decision. And he had a long time to think about that regret on the way down, because it took 10, 15 seconds to get to the water. Is that something that comes up in counseling, that this, as you called it, a permanent solution to a temporary problem, that those who do this and survive realize their mistake?
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned this. Probably is Kevin Hines you're talking about, and we know him. And actually, that's who I was thinking of before I said what I just said. And if you think about, you know, he's now devoted his life to getting that message out there. Remember, it's a matter of emphasis. The message that he is emphasizing is what you remembered, almost the soundbite. The moment my hand left the rail, the first thought that entered my head was, I can't believe what I just did. It was the wrong thing to do. So that is a very gripping, even graphic image that sticks with us. But it's a very different message than the sort of, you know, revenge fantasy it sounds like comes across in the series. I watched one of the clips of the producer talking, and I heard that line that you mentioned, that they wanted it to be as painful as possible watching, you know, this event. And I don't for a minute think that they were intending to do harm, but it's very different to be in the entertainment business versus, let's say, the health business or the science business. Neither is better, but the way science works is you have an idea and you say, well, let's see what happens when. So I am encouraged that there is community discussion now happening so that people around the country are actually very much attuned to, are there bad things, you know, consequences that are happening. I think probably even the show's producers and creators are tuning into that. The question is, if you're doing a science experiment, you try a medication and it starts doing the wrong thing, you know, in our world, immediately you stop that medication because it's producing harm. And it'd be interesting to see how this plays out if in fact we do find that there are contagion effects happening across the country. What will happen as a result?
Viewers, we've talked about this graphic depiction of how she takes her own life. And we don't see that, I don't believe, until the very last episode of the first season, although it's been renewed now for a second season, so I'm not sure where you go with that. But producers wanted to dispel the idea that suicide is painless, unlike the MASH theme song. The viewers also have to go through her 13 reasons before they witness this graphic depiction of suicide. Might this horrible ending underline the needlessness of the act itself. You saw it, Lynn.
I hope so. I think for many who watch it, yes. For the vulnerable, maybe not. And I think those are the vulnerable adolescents are the kids we're worried most about.
I was going to ask, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to add, you know, and Michael, you had referenced earlier the guidelines for the media that you can find on the Suicide Prevention Resource Center website, and they've collected the, and they're based on research. So the research has suggested that the don'ts in the media are don't glorify or romanticize, don't normalize suicide, don't present overly detailed descriptions of a suicide that happens in the community, because they have in their studies found that that leads to more contagion.
But why? I mean, if this, I don't know how graphic this was or what she went through or how she attempted suicide or committed suicide, and I don't necessarily want you to talk about it on the radio, but if it's horrible and painful, why wouldn't that be a deterrent? Who would want to go through that?
I think you're also talking from a rational mind that's not feeling ill at the time. So when your brain is having an illness and it's uncontrolled, you don't think rationally. You may see some part of that character that you relate to, and you're going through that same struggle, and you see that that's the outcome she chose. So therefore, it must be a logical outcome to choose for someone who's dealing with the same things I'm dealing with. So I think from an adult perspective, or even from a person who is healthy and well and not experiencing a mental illness or a brain illness, as I like to call it, it doesn't seem like it's logical to make that same jump, but it's not always logical.
I know that parents, I guess if you have a subscription to Netflix, I believe that you can lock children out of watching certain shows. I'm not sure how vigilant parents are, but should parents allow their teenagers to watch this show?
I think in a perfect world, in the world you and I grew up in, yeah. But the truth is, our kids are walking around with Netflix in their pocket.
Right.
They're going to watch it. And so that piece is done. There's nothing more we can do about that except talk about
Well,
the
let
concerns.
Me reverse the question.
Okay.
If you have a child who has Netflix in their pocket, should you watch this show, whether or not your child is watching this show? So just in case they are.
I think you should, and I also think you should ask the question of your child, have you ever watched this show? Have you ever considered suicide? Have any of these things that you've seen on the show, have they happened to you? We have to begin by asking the questions. A lot of parents are afraid to ask even the simple question of, are you thinking about suicide? Do you know friends who are thinking about this? And helping them through what to do with that.
As people who work with young people, how prevalent are these thoughts among young people?
Well, and that's a great question. So it's not all teens, really, if you boil it down, that we'd be concerned about. It's the 8 or 9% of teens a year that actually do attempt suicide, or the 20% of teens a year that seriously consider it. That's really, I think, what mm-hmm. you were speaking to before.
Absolutely.
Is when you're asking the question, asking it from a rational mind, you're not in the mindset of one of the 20% of teens that are seriously considering suicide. This sends a very different message to
them. This is a TV show, and TV is old media. And for young people today, they have so many new media sources of new media in their pockets and on their computers, et cetera, from Facebook to Twitter to things we don't even know about yet because we're too old to know. Have you noticed an uptick? And these other sources of media are sometimes mean mm-hmm. because they're anonymous. So have you noticed an uptick in suicide or suicide attempts among consumers of this new media?
I've seen a lot more suicide thoughts and suicidal behaviors related to social media in particular. We get a lot of our concerns to our counselors actually from posts on social media that kids have done. We actually just sent out something last week about a challenge where they're challenging one another to engage in suicidal behaviors or watching or idolizing suicidal music or television, keeping them in the mindset of depression.
What is that about the teenage brain? I don't think that adults necessarily engage in that, but I know that teenagers have done this through music for years, through movies and television. What is this fascination with this cult following of suicide?
I wish I could explain teenagers to you. Teenagers are not always as rational. But the other thing, too, is I think there are a lot of teenagers who do not believe that the end result is death, that it's a long-term. In fact, when we do a lot of grief responses in our district, sometimes they our teenagers struggle with the fact that people their age can die. They enjoy the risk. They enjoy the thrill. They enjoy the, you know, endorphins that come from having these risky conversations or being different than their parents. There's always also that struggle developmentally of being different than the people who raised you, becoming who you are.
Yeah, define yourself. Mm-hmm. Megan on Facebook writes, as a mother of two boys, I watched it from the perspective of how others impacted her life. I don't agree with Hannah taking her life, but I do feel that many people in the story impacted her life in very real ways. This is not far off from what actually happens in high school. I've been out for almost 20 years, but it very much hits that nail on the head with rape, bullying, social cliques, school sports figures being glamorized, etc. Suicide is not an act that is exclusive to kids. Just last week, Hickory's longtime mayor Rudy Wright apparently took his own life at the age of 69. His family said mental health and depression affect so many, regardless of one's position in the community or the size of one's smile. He was known as always carrying around this enormous smile and hiding, I guess, masking his own depression. How can you know when what you're seeing is a mask, something covering up something serious?
Well, I think as people here have been saying, you have to ask, you have to have the discussion. If one, you know, if one of the good things is coming out of this series, it's that there is more discussion. And to your point about the modernity of it, you know, the other word or name for the contagion effect is the Werther effect. The Sorrows of Young Werther by Goethe in 1774, actually, where he dies by suicide, had to be pulled off the shelves because there was contagion even back then.
Wow. Dr. John Santapietro is Chief Clinical Officer of Behavioral Health at Carolina's Healthcare System. He's here with, along with Lynn Henninghausen, Director of Davidson Lifeline, and Lisa Newman, a crisis specialist at CMS Student Services. Thank you all for the hour.